When someone you love is facing cancer, you want to do more than send a card or flowers that will wilt in a week. You want to actually help. That's where the Balm Box comes in. Our care packages are built from research with over 500 cancer patients and caregivers, packed with items people actually use during treatment. Think soothing, practical, thank goodness I have this kind of relief. For you, it's not just a gift. It's a way to show up in a moment where words fall short. For them, it's comfort, calm, and a reminder they're not alone. From chemo-friendly boxes to mastectomy recovery kits, even options for men, we've made it simple to give something that's elegant, premium, and genuinely useful. And yes, domestic shipping's always free on orders over $50, because making someone feel cared for shouldn't be complicated. So skip the empty get well soon. Send real help, real comfort, and maybe even a laugh. Visit thebalmbox.com. That's thebalmbox.com. Balm, like healing and care. The Balm Box. Because cancer patients don't need bouquets and brownies. They need Balm.
Through the Gryffindor is hitting the road once again for Through the Griffin Tour this upcoming March, and we are headed to the southwest section of the country this time. We are coming to Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Houston, and Dallas. I am so excited for this tour. As usual, we'll have our VIP tickets in case you want to get, to meet me and Ben. We will be doing a Jay vs. Ben before the show, answering questions submitted by you guys. We'll be doing Q&A and, of course, a live performance of Through the Gryffindor. It is my favorite thing in the world, being out on the road, meeting you guys, interacting with the community. There is seriously nothing like it at all. Tickets are on sale now to every single one of those show dates. If you want more information about dates and times and specific venues, you can head on over to supercarlinbrothers.com/events. Seriously, I cannot wait to see you guys in real life and to be back on the road with the entire crew. All of them will be there. You get to meet the entire SCB crew. Like, I know we talk about magic, but it is real. This is the real magic of the show. It's not in the books. It's in the people. We'll see you there.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I'll tell you what's poppin', Ben.
What's poppin'?
What's poppin' is the end of the Formula One racing season.
Dude, all I can say is doot, 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 doot.
Max Verstappen. Oh my gosh. Okay. So even if you're not into sports, even if you're not into racing at all, I dare say this might cross into your like Game 7 World Series, like, I guess I'll turn on baseball for the year kind of realm.
There's no doubt about it. Like, you're talking about the season long journey. Not everybody's always interested in like Game 2 of the season because the stakes aren't really there. Nobody really knows who like the standout teams are or anything like that. But we are in the final 2 weeks of the season, and we've got this like real, almost like Rocky or Creed, you know, boxing type situation going on where Max Verstappen is the 4-time reigning drivers champion.
Right.
And this whole season, he has been this like absolute underdog.
Yes. Somehow. You're right. Like, it's very much like every Rocky movie where he's like always wins in the last movie, but then starts the next movie
despite being the world champ, also the underdog.
Right. It's like somebody has come out of the woodwork and all of a sudden it's like, oh, nobody knew that there was this like Russian monster boxer man who has been having to work at like a meatpacking factory himself because Russia doesn't have the proper infrastructure. So now we're going to battle him, but he's like really, really strong and Rocky's probably going to get killed. But then somehow against all odds, he like overcomes everything, and friendship and Adrian are at the core of
Adrian. Yes, exactly. Friendship and Adrian.
Yeah. But that is exactly how this season is playing out. Like, you know, if you're unfamiliar, like you're probably familiar with the names of like Ferrari and Mercedes as like major team names. And then there's Red Bull, which is like the energy drink. And then there's McLaren, which maybe if you're not like a car nut, you might not have heard of before. But coming
I never heard of McLaren until like this season of watching F1.
Okay. Okay.
You know, like we went to Japan and we drove past like a McLaren like dealership,
right?
And I was like, oh, they make cars.
Yeah. Like that, yeah. The racing car team also has like, you know, pedestrian cars that you can buy for the road.
Yes. I mean, which makes sense. But well, I mean, Ferrari doesn't make cars like that, but Mercedes does.
Right.
And then, but like Red Bull doesn't make cars, you know?
Nope.
McLaren could have been anything. They could have been like a mobile network in Korea for all I knew, you know?
You're an airline. Or something. Yeah. But they're not. They are a car manufacturer. And coming into the season, they have had just what is far and away the fastest car. But the thing that I think has made the season incredibly interesting is that it seems like there's this like uniform agreement across everybody participating in the sport that while the McLarens both have the fastest cars of the 20 on the grid, Max is still regarded as like singularly the best driver. It's just his car isn't necessarily like it's been going through like more turmoil.
Yeah.
And there's a myriad of reasons why you could possibly explain what's going on there, because they've been very dominant for years. But it's been really cool because like you're almost watching this like one guy using like raw talent to overcome a kind of like challenging vehicle,
right?
And the other two, who are also, you know, Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, with Piastri being your driver,
right?
Phenomenal drivers, but they definitely have the best car.
They definitely do. And that has been their edge kind of all season. And it is, I mean, if you feel like the NFL feels scripted, my goodness, you should, watching this season unfold of F1 has felt almost like that.
With
8 races to go, it's like, well, Max isn't mathematically eliminated, but like it's pretty impossible for him to win. But now you're like 2 races left and you're staring down the barrel of, oh my God, it could happen because a bunch of crazy things have happened. So like here's the setup. Early in the season, McLaren, each team has 2 drivers. McLaren has Oscar and Lando.
Yep.
And then there's Max on Red Bull.
Yeah.
Those are the 3 players effectively for the season. And for the early part of the season, Oscar was out in front. He won like 5 races or something.
Yes. He's won 7 total this season.
Right. Yeah. He was dominant. No one could touch him. Then suddenly, despite this, but like Oscar is considered like the second driver almost of McLaren.
Right.
Like they definitely, like Lando is considered their primary driver. And suddenly it seemed like, you could never like put your finger on it, and they would never admit to such a thing, but it really felt like McLaren was like, look, we know you're winning by like a landslide, but we're favoring Lando right now.
Right.
And so what you've slowly seen is like a bunch of very weird decisions and moments where it just sort of seems like, why are you doing this and not helping the guy who's already winning?
Right.
And what's happened is, sure enough, eventually Lando passes Oscar in the points. And now it's like, oh my God, they're just going to have to duke it out. Max has been eliminated. Except that's not what's happened, because now both McLaren drivers have like had 2 DNFs, which means did not finish.
Right.
Each of them was eliminated from an individual race because of a crash or like an engine failure. And then in this last race in Las Vegas this past weekend, it was a great race, super fun. It's at night, it's in Vegas, there's lights everywhere, it's super cool.
Yeah.
But what happens is, after the race, both McLaren drivers are disqualified because their cars were like literally a hair's length too close to the ground.
Yeah, and this is, it's like a very big part of the sport. Like, if you're unfamiliar with it, like MKBHD actually made like a really great video once upon a time talking about, I think he went to the Las Vegas Grand Prix last year.
Oh,
and
amazing.
He was talking about like what he loved so much about the sport and like what made it interesting and like all the things he didn't know. But on the bottom of the car back in the day, there literally used to be a like a physical piece of wood. And what they would do with that piece of wood is as the like race unfolded, it would get shaved down because of the amount of downforce that these vehicles have. So like the bottom of their car is almost like scraping the ground.
Right.
And in order to make regulations fair and everything for all the different cars, they basically created a standard where you can't shave off more than this many millimeters of that plank.
Right.
And I think now it's actually like a titanium plank that lives on the bottom of the car. So if you ever see them driving, there's like sparks.
Is that what the sparks are?
That's what the sparks are. Yeah. And so it's a thing that like everybody is contending with all the time. It's like you could technically make your car faster by having more downforce, but then you run the risk of like wearing too much skid plate. And basically both of the McLarens ended up being disqualified because they used too much. But
right. And there's like apparently zero margin for error. It's not like it has to be here, but if it's like one or two in either direction, that's enough. Like apparently the science is so concrete that like every millimeter offers you so much more advantage that if you're over it at all, that's it.
That's it. Yep. Yep. Exactly. So it was really crazy because going into Las Vegas, Max needed to win. He did. Lando came in second.
Right.
So, you know, it was sort of like normally you get 25 points for winning a race. Second place gets 18. So it's like, while you got 25 points, you only actually close the margin by 7,
right,
because of the person behind you. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the McLarens are disqualified. And so instead of Max just making 7 points on them, he made 25 points on them. And now we're down to Oscar and Max being tied for second with like 366 points. And Lando was in first with 390.
It is. And what is crazy to me is everyone's calling it the comeback story for Max, which it totally is.
Yeah.
But at the same rate, what I think is crazy is that it's not just Max. It reminds me of the opening scene of Cars, the movie.
Okay.
You know, where it's like, you know, one, you know, the legend, the runner up, the rookie or whatever.
Right.
You know, yes. And that's basically literally what you've got here in terms of like the legend being Max, the runner up being Lando and the rook. I mean, Oscar's not a rookie, but it's only his second year driving.
Third year.
So he's like very young.
Yeah.
In terms of it. And it's just sort of like, here they are. Those are the three. Two of them are literally tied in second. And one's been battling car trouble. One's been battling with his teammate. And it's like, it feels like the two people who have been screwed all season are now tied in second to take down Lando.
Yeah.
And it's just like, honestly, and I think it's so funny that it's the two drivers we like.
I know. I know. Yeah.
I'm just so, like, I don't even care who wins. I just want one of them to beat Lando. Which is also probably sounds silly because Lando was Oscar's teammate, but I feel like McLaren has screwed Oscar in favor of Lando, and I want one of those two to beat him by the end of the season.
The thing is that like teammate is also like the weirdest thing when it comes to the sport of F1, because it's not a very team sport. Like there, you can earn points as a team. The overall organization that runs the team gets more money based on how well the team does as a whole and everything, but really what it comes down to is that like you have two distinct drivers who are going out there trying to win every weekend. And because each car across different teams are different from each other, the only person who you have like a one-for-one comparison to is your teammate.
Right.
So it's like how well you did is almost on the basis of how well your teammate did.
Yeah.
So this is like another one of those things where it's like, the McLaren is so good that going into any race, it wouldn't be uncommon for both McLarens to be in the top three.
Right.
Whereas like Max has won 6 races this season and his teammate is like coming in like 18th.
Right. Like so, almost at the bottom.
Right. So like the other person driving Max's same car can't get into the top 10 and Max is winning.
Right.
So it's like that's like part of the demonstration of like the McLaren is clearly good because both of these guys are able to park it in the top 5. And yeah. So anyway,
there are situations though where you see the teammates working together for the better result. Like,
oh yeah, right.
Like
right,
you yes. do see it, but what's frustrating is watching the other teams do it to their advantage. So like yesterday you had an interesting stacking where we've got, where was George Russell? He was in third. Yeah. Okay. We had Mercedes in third, Mercedes in fourth, and McLaren in fifth.
Right.
Right. So it like the guy in fourth was actually driving faster than the guy in third, but he was like 13 seconds back on him.
Right.
Right. The McLaren behind him, that was Oscar, is driving faster than both of them. So like in terms of like lap speeds, but he can't get around the Mercedes in front of him. And all they're telling that guy, whose name was Kimi Antonelli, is just defend as long as possible because he's driving faster than both of you. But if he can't get around you, he can't attack fourth place. And if he can't attack third place and get on the podium.
Right.
So like to that effect, it was like it doesn't matter whether or not you are driving faster, just don't let him pass or hold him off as long as possible, because if he gets in front, he will absolutely eat away at the lead. Like you're driving faster than the guy in front of you, but like not slow down,
right,
but like just hold him off as long as you can. And it totally worked. Like he never got around him,
right,
which was like frustrating if you're me watching, because that's all you're hoping for the whole race, because you're like, oh my god, the podium is so possible right now.
right. Yeah.
But then on the flip side, McLaren will just do the exact opposite. It like bites them so often, where like there was a situation earlier this year that I'm still angry about, where they had them pit one lap after another, and Lando, or the guy currently in front, had a really slow pit, and as a result he came out behind Oscar,
right?
And it was just like, you know, if he'd been on another team, it'd just be like, too bad, so sad.
That's just driving,
right? But because they were on the same team, the McLaren's in the radio and they're like, hey Oscar, give that position back to Lando, that's our fault that he's behind you. It's just like, and he has to do it. It's like, I mean, it's like what do you mean? Like, it's your fault.
It's crazy. And my favorite thing about all this was then my driver, Max, gets on the radio and they're like, his engineer is explaining to him like what the McLarens just did. And he was like, they made him give the spot back because they had a slow pit stop. Like, yeah. He's like laughing at them.
He was.
For the ridiculousness of the situation.
It was so frustrating. Anyway.
But you can't write sports. Like, you know, the narratives, the outcomes, like it's so crazy what happened. So I'm sorry if we bored you to tears with our F1 talk. I know how foreign this can sound if you're not like familiar with the pieces of the puzzle, but like this is one where like Netflix does like the docuseries Drive to Survive, and it basically follows like the whole season, and it kind of like helps you better understand all the different narratives, even the people who aren't like in first. It's like there's stuff happening, you know, the people battling for like 12th and 11th,
right?
Like,
there's narratives back there where they're starting the season not even hoping to get first, just like get in the top eight or something.
Exactly. Best of the rest type situation or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, this upcoming season, depending on how the next couple of weeks goes, could be just like the most fascinating real life sports execution story ever.
Right.
Like it's going to be thrilling to watch unfold.
It will be. It's going to be very thrilling. So, you know, finish your Thanksgiving or whatever. I guess this will come out after Thanksgiving. If you still got people in town, turn it on Saturday. Just enjoy yourself.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. But anyway, that's all for F1 talk today.
Yeah. We'll move past F1 and instead talk about everyone's other favorite thing, the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Ha ha! Man.
Yeah. We got out to our first home game of the season, which was also the last home game of the season. Over the weekend here. They're playing Miami. They lost. We didn't really expect to win. Season's sort of a wash. It's okay.
Next year is our year.
I don't know if you guys are, I doubt you're following it, but Virginia Tech did just hire a new head coach who used to coach at Penn State. His name is James Franklin. People are very, very excited about this hire.
Yes. Yeah. This is definitely like it's a very big deal. Like earlier this season, Virginia Tech let go of their head coach, and it was kind of this whole thing where it was like, oh no, like now what are we gonna do? And I was like reading all these articles that were like a bunch of teams have like let go of head coaches, which means like a lot of like much, much, much more prominent and better teams are gonna be like first in line for like top tier coaching.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like Tech doesn't have any talent. The recruiting class for several years has been a little dicey. Half the players have decided to like change teams and just like exit and go to different schools. The firing of the coach in the middle of the season also opened up a transfer portal that like a bunch of players like just took.
Right.
They were just like, all right, yeah, if you're going to let me leave, I'll leave. So things were looking very, very, very bleak. And then Penn State fired their head coach. And we were just like open arms, like, yes, come
please,
here.
Please come.
Come join us.
Come join us.
So now all of a sudden there's this, like a whole new renewed enthusiasm. And he was out on the field at halftime, like hyping up the crowd. And you're just like, okay. There is like the possibility of something exciting on the horizon.
There is. And it's just like, okay, let's go. We're all excited. We're looking towards next season. That was exciting. But the game itself, despite losing, was just like a lot of fun. It was, I felt like we went up early. It was like a noon game. So we had to get up there early. We brought the whole team at the office here.
Yep.
And then it was also like sort of an open invitation to the people who are on like our Patreon calls to like, you know, if you want to, you can come to our tailgate.
Right. Yeah. Like we will tell you where we are. You can come join us. Right. It'll be great. Yeah.
And we had a few people show up and it was super fun. Like just hanging out before the game, like grilling wings in the parking lot, doing the whole thing. And
yes.
Hanging out with like the SCB community there. The whole day, despite like losing the game or whatever, it was still just like an absolute blast, I thought.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, it's just like there's something about, and this is sort of like what I go back to, like from childhood. Like I always kind of tell the story about, like, you know, if you're familiar with any Virginia Tech player, it's probably Michael Vick, who, you know, sort of has got like his own, you know, lore and story. Yeah. And there's a whole thing going on there. But in 1999, when he first emerged at Virginia Tech, it was this sort of like everything changed. And I remember Dad brought us to a game against Syracuse. I always forget the exact number, but it was like 62 or 63 to nothing. And it was just like, you know, but like we got there, he had like a little like charcoal grill that we busted out of the back seat. You know, we were like grilling hot dogs and had like potato chips. And it was just like, just to be there was so fun.
Right.
You know, and then what kind of spawned from that, like Michael Vick's presence at Virginia Tech, was like years and years and years of really, really good people wanting to come and play there because they had like become a part of like
the national scene.
Yeah. So this was the team that like, you know, all of a sudden was like on the map. And forever, so much of the fun could be sourced from the fact that you got to go and watch your team be great.
Right.
You know, and it was like, oh, this is amazing. But yeah, I think that this past weekend was a really clear glimpse. It was like, we were going in, you know, there was 10-1 odds stacked against Virginia Tech for winning. It was very unlikely, but it was still a sold out stadium. We still got to do all the tailgate stuff. We still got to go meet a part of the, you know, the marching bands walking through everywhere. There's flyovers happening, you know, like big military, like, you know, aircraft, I don't know, not an aircraft carrier because that's a boat, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
just like everything about it is just like fun and cool and exciting, and it's loud and there's Enter Sandman, and it's just all wonderful. I mean I loved every second of it, and we were never meant to win and we were never winning. We had a couple of good plays that were fun to like watch.
Yeah.
And that was about it.
Yeah. We had also pretty good seats. We were like 5 or 6 rows back from the field.
Yes.
Which was really cool. So like anytime there was a kickoff and it went like into the end zone or whatever, and you had like the touchback where the ball is placed on the 25-yard line to like start the new drive, like we were right there. We could like look between the players, you know, we had like a clear line of sight down the 25-yard line. That was really cool. And yeah, there was a little excitement at the end where it looked like, oh man, maybe they're mounting some sort of crazy comeback or something, which they didn't. But it was really fun, the whole thing. And I think it just sort of proves that it's like, it is like winning is great, but like the community and the environment is like the point.
Yeah. And you know, I think that like this is like an interesting topic of discussion, because I know that like even ourselves, like we have like our online community of people, and like it's been kind of amazing since 2012 when we started Super Carlin Brothers to like watch as people have like kind of, you know, become fixtures in the community. It's like people we know by name just simply because they've been watching and being like a participant in what we do here for so long. And I think that for like a long time, I maybe took for granted a lot of the community that I was just like naturally finding myself falling into through like, you know, having a high school job, you know, and having like your coworkers or whatever, or, all of like the year round sports that we did. It kind of meant that like you were always like familiar with people from every grade, you know, in your high school, because like you kind of got to know a little bit of everyone, you right. know? So like you could like walk down any hallway and give somebody a high five, and it was like, boom, bam, you know, it's like you had these people who felt like they were like part of your tribe. But then I think, you know, like as we've gotten older, the other thing that's really emerged is just social media and the internet and like all these other things, which obviously case in point is that like we're on the internet, like that is the platform under which we operate and that our community was built around. But community, like I think in-person community especially, is something that can be like hard to find in like today's age. And I think
like a lot of times it can feel a little like isolating sometime if you're like a creator online, because like there can be like this like big audience of people that's watching you, and you know, like those people exist in the world, but like you are like rarely interacting with them in like a face-to-face sort of basis.
Right.
You know, and there's like a certain amount of like distance you feel like you need to keep people at, because it's like you don't want to like create some sort of like weird relationship or something.
So like a potential like power dynamic problem.
Right, right. Yeah. Like you don't want to like do that. And I think like I think for a very long time I had like those walls really, really like built like too far away, you know,
right,
from myself. And it was like I don't just need to keep maybe people at like arm's reach, but at like, you know, several arms reach, you know?
Right, right, right. Yes.
And yeah. I've just been like, ever since we've been going on like tour and stuff, I've just been like so impressed with like the viewers and listeners of like the shows and the podcasts. And like, I feel like I have been able to like break down some of those walls in a way that is like, you know, like we'll get in these calls every month with people on Patreon, or we'll go out to the shows, or like even this weekend at the tailgate. It's just like, it's like, it is so great to experience the entire journey like with these people who you feel like you're like kind of close to.
Yeah.
In like a way that it's like, I don't know. It feels very like empowering. It makes me feel like more like confident as a person, I think. And I just like it. It feels like it's been a very long journey, I feel like, for me, like getting to this space. And it just I don't know. I just want to say thank you is what I'm saying to the people who come out and support us and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's like one of these things that's like aggressively hard to articulate. But like one of the things in no way, shape or form, this is more just like celebrity status in a much more like prominent way, but like I oftentimes like I can't imagine what it like we all admire people who are famous, and it's like I think like a lot of times like the desire for like being prominent in that way, being on the cover of, you know, People magazine or GQ or something like that, you know, like it's like, oh man, like how cool, like they made it, they're headlining a movie, they're a Marvel superhero, like whatever. It's like all those things are also like kind of they're fun to absorb, they're fun to watch. It's like it's a fun daydream to imagine yourself being on that red carpet or whatever, like, oh, like what if that was me, you know? But then oftentimes I think about the fact that like if you're Brad Pitt or something and you go to like, you can't just go to like, you know, like a bar or like a brewery or something and just, you know, like let's say you're in that status, like you just can't go like live the ordinary life. It's almost like because you've like ascended into this like thing, then all of a sudden you're like kept at a distance in this other weird way, which is like so opposite of what the perception is from all of us looking up to those people.
Right.
As if they get to be the most popular person in every room they walk into, but like they have to be guarded in some way, shape or form. And so, yeah, it's weird. It really is weird. It's like trying to find like the exact right position and what feels appropriate, you know, is, I don't know. It's
yeah,
it's a weird line to walk.
Right. Yeah. But it does, I feel like, you know, it does, it feels like I've like, you know, like found my tribe, you know?
That's exactly it.
In a sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. You find your people. And yeah, so that was the other thing I was going to say about like even going to like the Virginia Tech football games. It's like you get out there and like you could like walk to the parking lot or whatever and like look at everybody's like bumper stickers and you could be like, wow, I have like a very different like worldview than the people who are like also here sharing these bumper stickers or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? And but then there's also like instead of looking at it like the differences between you and these people, it's like, yeah, but we're also all here to root for the Hokies.
Right.
And like, and that's kind of wonderful.
Right.
And like, you know, then there's also like the rivalry aspect. So like we're playing Miami, and Miami is like a noted rival of Virginia Tech because they're both, you know, historically competitive ACC teams that would be competing for the top spot in that division or whatever.
Right.
But then this is always something that also like warms my heart a little bit is then like, if you look from like, this is like a rivalry game right now. Like, you know, here's my tribe. There's your tribe. We're in opposition, like go Hokies. But then you think about like the Olympics and it's like all of a sudden the tribe got bigger.
Right.
You know, and now it's sort of like, I don't care if they played for Miami, you know, in the throw shot put, you know, now they're in my tribe again.
Right.
You know, and it's like I think sometimes like that's like this like upside down way that we like look at things is like we other people, but it's like, no. It's like we shouldn't do that. Like we are all on the same, we're all humans. We're on the same team.
Right.
You know, like we should be working together, you know, like it's okay to have like our tribes. It's okay to have our communities. It's okay to have like those types of things. But like, keep in mind that like we're all under the same one.
Right.
You know, like it's like, yeah, you can go to the Olympics. You can be like, hey, go United States. Like I'm an American and that's who I'm rooting for. But like on a planetary level, you know,
yeah.
Like,
guess what? We're all earthlings too.
We're all earthlings. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When we were there, like I said, we had pretty good seats. And we could see down, like we were right behind the Miami sideline.
Right.
And so, like in front of us, a former Miami player, was down there chatting with like some of the players now or like some of the coaching staff or whatever, maybe just there to like lift them up or I don't know, there to catch a game, whatever. But I'm sure you know who he is because it was Michael Irving.
Yeah.
Who he's on, you know, I don't know which network he's on, but he's on like one of those like halftime shows every single
right
like, you know, week doing, you know, breakdown of the entire NFL. But it was like, oh my gosh, look, he's standing right there. That's crazy. Like right in front of us. So cool. But like, and then I'm like, you know what? What's crazy about this is like, I'm so excited to see him because he's such a good player. But by all accounts, he played for Miami and then went to the NFL to play for the Cowboys. And if there are two teams I dislike more in terms of fandoms, like
right.
It's probably Miami and the Cowboys,
right?
Like as a fan of the Hokies and the Commanders, and it's just like this guy has put a hurting on my teams forever,
right?
But
right.
Also, like I'm so, like whoa, like I don't. It's not like I'm seeing him like you are the like
you like, represent everything I
know,
hate.
I know. Yeah. It's just like all I can do is be like I just respect your game. Like you're so good at right. what you do, you right. know.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny to me as well is that like when I was a kid, I remember thinking like that, like we chose the like the Hokies because this is like the like in some way I was like, oh, well, they're like ethically better, you know, and like, yeah. So like all the trash talk as a kid I would hear. And I would be like, well, of course I want to beat UVA. Like those guys are terrible people.
Right.
And it's like, no, they're not. It's like, and this is also like a little small piece of perspective, like where growing up as a child, this was something where as like a 10-year-old kid, I looked up to the collegiate football players because it was like, they're these like otherworldly, huge, massive athletes. And they're like, you know, they're bigger than me. They're older than me. Like, you know, they're further along. They're doing big things. You know, so like I admired them like that. And then as I got older, I remember thinking how weird it was that I was as old as the players on the field.
Right.
And that kind of came with its own like weird paradigm shift where it was like, I'm a freshman in college. These guys were seniors in high school, just like me weeks ago.
Right.
You know, like we're just barely through the woods on this thing.
Yeah.
And now going out there and being like 36 and looking at people who I'm like
kids.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 14 to 18 years older than,
right.
You know, all of a sudden it's sort of like I was graduating high school when you were being born.
Right.
And now you're like a 6'5" 240-pound beast of a human being.
Right.
But like even that, like I think it contextualizes like these are kids who had dreams, who achieved those dreams, who are out there on the field doing something that they love doing, and a small percentage of them will get to go on and do it in like an even greater capacity.
Right.
But like otherwise it's like there's a piece of me that's also just sort of like they are kids in a way.
Right. You know? I mean, like, for sure they are. I mean, yeah, it's like some of them, you're right. Like, you know, if you're a freshman starting in college, you know, you were in high school, you know, 12 weeks ago.
Right. 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 Like, yeah. Like before summer break.
Right.
You were at a high school.
You were at high school. And now it's possible if you're good enough, you're playing in front of, you know, 80 to 100,000 people.
Right.
You know, like that's a ton of pressure. That's a whole life change. That's a different kind of experience.
Yeah.
But then it's like, it's cool. Cause like, you know, it's like maybe like when you're a kid, you're looking up to them. And then when you're there, it's like, these are my peers. And it might be like 18 years later. It's like, what's your connection? It's like the connection is that, it's all part of the same through line. Like you're all sharing the same history
right.
together. And it's like, that's what makes it like fun. And that's what makes the environment and the culture really cool. Cause it's like Tech has not been very good this year or for the past few years, really, which is a bummer. But here's what like astounds me is that despite not being super good, I could not believe how many night games Virginia Tech had this year.
Oh, right.
And
yes.
How many like Thursday games. And it's like, you might say like, well, what's the difference? What does it matter? The difference is that if you're playing the night game, that is where they are expecting the most number of, that's where they're expecting to get the most number of viewers.
Right.
Right. So if you're, they want to put big, like, attractive games on TV to get the most number of viewers on their show to like satisfy advertisers or whatever.
Right.
And like what's amazing to me is that Tech keeps getting all these night games because they're not playing well. And right. You might think like, who's watching this? And the answer is Virginia Tech fans who are like rabid despite the quality of the team.
Yes.
And it's like that's why they're getting like premier primetime like showings, even though they're not playing well. It's because the fans are so like immersed in it.
Well, and you know, what's also funny is that like growing up, we would oftentimes make it to like a bowl game, you know, and like on some level, like a bowl game, you know, if you're not like in like the national conversation, it sort of like becomes like the new prize. It's sort of like, yeah, you get to play one more game at the end of the season somewhere cool. And there's a lot of pomp and circumstance around it. And like, we'll call that like the nice, like finale or whatever. And I feel like Tech is, they infrequently win their bowl games, but I actually think it's for the exact same reason because despite whatever the record is, I feel like they get elevated to like a top tier of bowl game.
Right, right.
Because the fan base will travel anywhere in the country to go see them play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, they're kind of like, okay, well, like, you know, who do we send to the, you know, Thompson Tire Bowl or whatever?
We can send Tech or this other team that is maybe a little better than Tech, but has the exact same record.
Right.
And they'll be like, well, send them because we'll get more people. We'll sell more tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And it works. So anyway, it was just a fun weekend. A great reminder of the importance of community and just being around, you know, people you're excited to see.
Yes, it was a great weekend. Loved it. Go Hokies. Looking forward to the future.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. So often when I regale you all with my business ideas, they seem to come from the far away past. But more recently, I had contemplated trying out a sawmill. Not, you know, some like huge structure or building, just like a small little guy that I could use to break down lumber on my land and potentially use it to and build a house or more likely make a bench. But just like running a business, I quickly learned that it requires like 53 different hats, not counting the required hard hat for safety, cutting, processing, drying, all before you've hammered in a single nail. And it reminds me so much of running a business. Not every task requires a whole person or employee. And starting out, those expenses you can't always afford. It means you end up doing a little bit of a lot of different tasks. And that's where Shopify is absolutely clear. clutch. Shopify is the ultimate way to get your business started in no time. With their easy-to-use templates, you can start selling right away, and from there, it can help you to write product descriptions, touch up photos, track inventory, sales, and so much more. So turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/poppop. Let's go to shopify.com/poppop one last time for safety. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Uncommon Goods. Oh, the holidays. Back in our younger years, Ben, our dear friends, and myself had quite a tradition when it came to how we shared the festive spirit. Okay, so Uncommon Gift Wrapping was the name of the game. Wrap the gifts in the most difficult way you can think of. So there were things like burying each other's gifts underground, inside of massive rubber band balls. We used spray foam, duct tape, shrink wrap. I sunk one of my friend's gifts in a pond once, and he had to go get it in the snow. Ben, I'm not kidding, used a lionfish one time to guard the gift. But these days, I like to think we've matured, and now the name of the game is Uncommon Goods. And Uncommon Goods has a brilliant selection of some of the most unexpected, unique, and impressive gifts you can track down this holiday season. Like, personally, I've used them just for myself, not even for a gift, but I'm the proud owner of a popcorn bowl, which has this cool kernel sifter at the bottom, so you don't have any more, like, tooth-breaking handfuls of popcorn, because you guys know how much I love popcorn. But then, there's all sorts of stuff. There's, like, NFL game day bingo cards. There's, like, murder mystery jigsaw puzzles. Guys, listen, I'm not kidding. They have a cast iron potato baker for the Gryffindor in your life. Like, how cool is that? Like, honestly, maybe I've inspired you here, and if you're going to, you know, go and set your loved one's gifts in concrete, and I recommend that you do, you should at least find them something special to, you know, uncrack at the middle of that big old block. Look, an Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, like from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers to sports fans to foodies, mixologists, gardeners. You're going to find all sorts of crazy, unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/poppop. That is uncommongoods.com/poppop for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
When someone you love is facing cancer, you want to do more than send a card or flowers that will wilt in a week. You want to actually help. That's where the BalmBox comes in. Our care packages are built from research with over 500 cancer patients and caregivers, packed with items people actually use during treatment. Think soothing, practical, thank goodness I have this kind of relief. For you, it's not just a gift. It's a way to show up in a moment where words fall short. For them, it's comfort, calm, and a reminder they're not alone. From chemo-friendly boxes to mastectomy recovery kits, even options for men, we've made it simple to give something that's elegant, premium, and genuinely useful. And yes, domestic shipping's always free on orders over $50, because making someone feel cared for shouldn't be complicated. So skip the empty get well soon. Send real help, real comfort, and maybe even a laugh. Visit thebalmbox.com. That's thebalmbox.com. Balm, like healing and care. The Balm Box. Because cancer patients don't need bouquets and brownies. They need balm.
I'll tell you what though, Ben. Something else. Okay, while we're on the topic of the game.
Okay.
Okay. So, at the game, you were grilling some wings up in the parking lot. Ben's a good grill master out there. Had the Blackstone.
Yeah,
cooked the wings the night before. Had the Frank's Red Hot going. And I will tell you what, one of my favorite things in the world is eating chicken wings in a parking lot outside of a stadium.
Yeah.
Like, I absolutely love it. It is, there is magic in that food. And yours were amazing this weekend.
Thank you.
So thank you for grilling.
Of course.
What was not amazing, guys, is that last Tuesday, we're recording this on Monday, so it's almost a full week later, we recorded this year's Goblet of Fire episode. And you'll have seen it by now, I suppose. But my goodness,
The wings, if you don't know what the Goblet of Fire is, it is an annual Thanksgiving tradition at Super Carlin Brothers where we find really hot sauce, put it on some wings, and then do a Jaber's Ben. We'll do like Harry, and it's always Harry Potter trivia about the book Goblet of Fire.
Yep.
And the catch is, if you get a question wrong, you have to eat one of the wings.
Right.
And that has been the format for 4 years now. And we've kind of like always stepped it up a notch. It's sort of like, well, we did pretty hot wings last year. Can we go higher? And this year we went to, I'm sure you're familiar with the YouTube show, Hot Ones. Hotter questions with even hotter wings or whatever. And they always have, the very last one is the last dab. It's like, this is really hot. In fact, it's so hot, we don't douse the wing in it. You just put a little drop on there
right. And
eat it, right? That's what we did last year. Since then, they've come up with like the last dab : Thermageddon.
Yeah.
And they mean it. You know, they mean it. It's got Pepper X. It's got Ghost Pepper. It's got Carolina Reaper. It's got Scorpion Peppers in it. Those are the four hottest peppers on Earth, and all four of them are present in this sauce.
Yes. I mean, it was like, literally we were trying to figure out like what the Scoville units was because it's not listed on the bottle. And when you go to the website, there's like a whole list of them going up, and at like, you know, at the top, there's like, you know, the last dab, whatever, Miracle Edition or something. It's like 2.5 million Scoville units. Above that is Thermageddon with a question mark.
It just says TBD.
We don't know how hot it is,
but it's more than that.
Yeah.
And my goodness, I lost the quiz, which meant I had to eat more wings.
Yes.
And oh man, I mean, capsaicin is a really weird thing. That's what makes wings hot, or peppers hot, or whatever. And it is like, what makes it spicy is that it's like a chemical that, it's not like it tastes spicy. It is like attacking your like tongue or your mouth or like the surface of your mouth.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? And it goes away pretty quickly in your mouth, maybe like 5 or 10 minutes. But where it doesn't go away is your stomach, where it just sits and just interacts with everything. And then you dump 6 more versions of it on top. And the night after we do the Goblet of Fire is always a long night.
It's always rough.
It's always rough because it's a lot of hot sauce and it's super hot or whatever.
This is what I think about every time I watch Hot Ones, in fact, is I'm always sort of like all these like glamorous celebrities who come on here and do it. It's like every single episode you watch, you're like, they're in for it tonight.
They are in
for it. Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what like level of celebrity you have. You can't like you. No one's stomach acid is able to like properly completely break down capsaicin.
Capsaicin.
And so that means you just keep feeling it.
And that is what has been happening to me since then. I got to Saturday morning and I was like, okay, my stomach hasn't really been hurting or anything, you know. I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna eat some of these wings right now.
Yeah.
And like Frank's Red Hot sauce is like poorly named. It's not red hot at all.
No.
It is very light on the heat.
Right.
But man, when it hit my stomach, I was like, it immediately like it didn't hurt in my mouth, but in my stomach, it was just like, like, what is this weird pain? And it kept like that kept happening to me all week last week.
Oh man.
Like I was totally fine. Like I would just be normal. And then I'd be going to bed and I'm like, am I feeling nauseous? Like, am I getting sick? I can't get sick. We have to go to the Tech game this weekend.
Right.
Like, this is terrible. Like, why do I feel nauseous?
Priorities.
And it's like, I know. And I'm like, ugh. Nothing ever happened. And I was like, well, that was weird. I wonder why I felt nauseous. And it's like, and then I'm like, oh, it's because of the wings. Why am I having stomach problems? It's because of the wings. Like,
did it damage your like stomach lining?
Like, did it like damage my stomach lining? Yes. And then like, even Saturday morning, I woke up and I was like, do I have a cramp? Like, I'm not even exercising. Like, why do I have a cramp right now? Like, why do I keep having all these weird stomach problems this week? And it's like, it's because of the wings.
Ugh.
It's because of the wings. And it has just been like, I can't believe how hot they must have been to still be affecting me in like these random ways, you know? Like, I hope you guys really enjoyed that episode.
I mean, it was hard fought. It was hard fought. Sure. Yeah.
And I'm just like, I can't, it's like, we've had such hot wings before, but it's never affected me for so long before.
I know.
And I'm like, what do I need to do? Can I repair something? Is it just like a matter of waiting or
what's your pink drink?
Pepto-Bismol?
No. It's like Mork, not Mork. It's like...
Not Mork. I know what you mean. The like yogurt drink.
Gilk?
Not Gilk. I know what you mean. Why can't I think of the name of it? It's like fermented yogurt drink, which sounds terrible.
It does.
Kefir.
Kefir. I can't believe how Kefir. Off I was trying to think of like weird names for it.
Yeah, but. Dude, I had some of that at the New York City Marathon. There was so many booths being like, you want some kefir? And I was like, heck yeah, I do.
Right. Yeah. So maybe you just like, maybe your stomach was full of all this wonderful new biome material. And then you just went through and just literally like sprayed inferno just and flamethrowered it. I know. Over it. I know.
Maybe I should get some kefir at lunch.
There you go. Well, and yeah, so my experience was also pretty aggressive as well.
Yeah.
Because I ate 7, I ate 5. And so I'm kind of like going through the rest of the day. I'm sort of like trying to test the water. I have like the famous comment from a couple of years ago where I was like, yeah, no, I already canceled swim lessons tomorrow. Like I'm not,
yeah.
You know, I am not doing that.
No thanks.
No way, no how. And, so this year, what I had afterwards was just Addison's dance class, which basically I go and like sit in the lobby for an hour while she is doing dance. And so, you know, I got home and Alice was like, yeah, can you like, do you mind if like you do that? And I'll like make dinner and then like we'll reconvene or whatever. I was like, yep, sounds perfect. So I go and I'm sort of sitting there and I'm just trying to like, you know, keep myself like easy breezy, you know, you know, like try not to like totally like lose myself in the process or whatever. And I make it through, get home. Alice has made steak for dinner, which is like, you know, my favorite meal. So I was like, this is perfect. You know, eat the dinner, whatever, go take Addison. We do bedtime. All that stuff goes well. I come downstairs and I like sit at this like stool in our kitchen. And I'm just sort of like, I'm like sitting there and Alice is looking at me. She's like, you're right. And I'm like, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
And she's like,
turns out I'm not.
She's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up. That's going to happen. And it's like, I run over to the sink and it's like all that, like the mouth sweat, you know, it's just like, no. And sure enough, then I'm like, I run to the bathroom and everything comes up. And it's
that
just,
must have been terrible.
Just as miserable the second time. But yeah, it was like one of those things where I think my body was literally like, what you ate was not food. Like it was not food.
Right.
That was not meant for digestion.
You know, we got down here and we were like, keep sending it to the next department. And we got to the end of the departments. So they were like, this is going back up.
This is yeah.
It's not. We've checked it everywhere. It's not food.
Yeah. So I barfed.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I know.
Had some sponges. Did you?
Had some sponges. Yeah. Which, you know, weird experience when you are like not feeling ill in any other way.
Right.
It was like, oh, all right. Well, that was like Alice was like, you were so. That was like the calmest I've ever seen somebody get sick.
Right.
And I was like, it's because I'm not feeling anything else.
Right.
Like
right.
There's
no fever.
Right.
There's no anything else. There's no headache.
No aches and pains.
Yeah.
Just blah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you can mentally just like isolate it, maybe it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Except it sounds like it was.
People are like, wow, you guys really went for it on this week's episode.
But we did.
We've got F1 talk. We've got Virginia Tech football talk. We got upset stomach talk. They're like, what is this
I
show?
I think we spent a solid 20 minutes about the importance of community. And
yeah, we did touch, you know, on that. Yeah.
I think we're good.
We're good. We've lifted hearts.
Okay. Let's upswing. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my new thing. So speaking about going to the pool or not going to the pool or whatever.
Sure.
As we know. Well, segue over to I've still been swimming, you know, getting ready for the next triathlon at this point, you know.
I mean, naturally. Yeah. You know? Yeah. We're almost making it right back around the sun again.
Yeah, exactly. So, a couple of weeks ago, I put my swim cap on, you know, and as I was doing it, the bottom ripped off of it. And I was like, "Oh, no."
Devastation.
Devastation. Now I got to swim without it. Blah. Terrible. Which is obviously not like a big deal because I don't have a ton of hair. It's, you know, not reducing tons of drag or whatever. But what I really liked about it was like the aerodynamic feel or hydrodynamic feeling. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
And like the way I like how it covers your ears. It like makes it like quieter, which is nice. Pools are very loud. I'll tell you what.
Huh.
Very loud.
Not an observation I would typically think about. Yeah.
Yeah. Very loud rooms. But I liked that. And then I was like, okay, I guess I got to go get a new swim cap or whatever. And then I was talking to Ethan. He's like, you should get some like earplugs too. Like just, you know, pools are like, you know, no reason to risk getting an ear infection. I was like, that's, you know what? Solid advice. There really is no reason to.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can prevent it further. I have nothing to lose by trying it. So I got some earplugs and I went out and got like a new swim cap. My old swim cap was just the one they gave me at the triathlon. The new one was like Speedo swim cap.
So you got like the thick material.
I guess so. Yeah. Like I would have thought like, you know, swim cap's a swim cap or whatever.
Sure.
Turns out no. If you get like a swim cap made by like a swimming brand, it's way better than the one they give you in your like swag bag.
I would almost imagine the one in the swag bag is nearly disposable.
I would say probably. So I put this one on and it's like miles better.
Wow.
Like I wouldn't have thought. Even if there was like, okay, there's a good one, there's a bad one, I would have thought like, yeah, but like, it's a swim cap.
I would have thought durability was the only thing changing.
Right, yeah.
Not performance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about like performance, but just like the way it like, it's like so much thicker, it is like tighter, and then with the earplugs as well, it was like, everything was, like, I used to like kick off the wall and I'd be like, yep, my hair's wet, you know, despite having the swim cap. Not that that's the point, I don't care if my hair gets wet. But this time I was like, you know, 17 laps in before I was like, did some water leak in, you know?
Weird.
Like, it's like that much tighter or whatever. And I was like, man, what an improvement. So that was nice. But then this past weekend, Beth is asking me, she's like, what do you swim in? Like, do you just swim in like your regular like swim trunks? Do you need like a jammer or something? Or,
right.
You know, and I was like, well, I mean, I've always thought just, you know, swim in your trunks as like, you know, to create drag. And then when you're actually
doing it,
that's when you put on the jammer and it's like a speed boost or whatever.
Right.
And like, that has been my conventional wisdom understanding of swim training forever.
Right.
And I've never thought about it at all. I was just like, this just makes sense. You know, I'm already used to it. What's the difference?
Right.
You know, it's just making me stronger or whatever. But I was like, you know what? I was super wrong about the swim caps. And before I even had the one from the triathlon, I wasn't even swimming in one of those. And I was like, should you be swimming in a drag suit or anything? Or like, is it better to be training in like the jammers or whatever?
Right. Like what you would actually participate like in the performance.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. And it's sort of like, there's definitely like some mixed opinions, but it seems like the old wisdom is in fact like, train with the drag suit for exactly what I just said. It'll just be, you'll just build more muscle because you're dragging more weight effectively. Okay. But, then it's sort of like, then like the newer school of thought is like, the problem is that because it's heavier, it affects your form so much. And it's like, it turns out that just training faster makes you faster.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm not even necessarily sure. But then I'm also thinking about it and I'm like, you know, like, here's the thing. Maybe there'd be some wisdom to it. Like if I was like racing every weekend or something,
right?
You know, it's like, okay, yeah, we'll train and then we'll see the effects here on Saturday at the meet or whatever. It's like, I'm not racing,
right?
You know, I'm doing like a triathlon a year at this point. You know,
I have no idea where the trajectory of this conversation is going and whether or not you're like definitely swim in jammer or definitely swim in drag suit. I'm like so on the edge of my seat about where this could go. Like, because you seem like you've talked to me like in both directions and I'm like, oh, I see. Okay. Yep.
Well, I know. Right,
yeah.
All I'm really trying to get at is that like for so long, I would have considered it like ridiculous to like just go train in a jammer when you could just do this like this hack to make yourself stronger.
Okay.
But and like would have like I wouldn't have even considered it. I wouldn't have even thought about it. And then I was just reading about it like this morning and I'm like, I feel like I should be training in a jammer because actually like this like old school thought that I had that someone probably told me when I was like 8
right
or something.
Yeah.
Is like what I've been going by ever since then without questioning it and just assuming it's the superior belief pattern,
right?
Or like the way to do it. And now I'm like, you know what, I think my entire experience every morning or every other morning could be like that much better and actually make me like swim better. And it's just like that kind of what I'm really trying to get at is that sometimes like you can be so in your own way because you're stuck in a certain way of thinking, and abandoning that way of thinking can feel like you've been wrong forever.
Right. You know, losing like a piece of yourself.
Like, yeah, not necessarily. I mean, I know it's just like swim trunks versus a jammer while you're swimming or whatever. It's not like a piece of yourself necessarily in this case, but
in this case, no, but I would say that there are certainly like, you know, if this is a metaphor for more important things.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I feel like that's what I'm trying to say. It's like as a metaphor for more important things, like I would have thought I would have told you that I was being so smart by doing it this way.
Right.
Like just saying like, I've always done it this way. It doesn't even matter. Like I'm just making myself stronger. It's clear, like training with a drag suit, but it'd be like always in it, like you could compare it to like running or something, and it'd be like, or biking, and it'd be like, yeah, just whenever you go biking, just like make sure the brakes are pressing a little bit, you know,
like against the rim of the bike
too. And it'd be like, that's not good advice.
Right.
That's
right.
Not good advice. That's gonna make it so much harder. You're not gonna be able to go as long, and in the end, like you're gonna have to like change the way you bike just to accommodate the problem you've created for yourself.
Right.
Right. Or like if you were like always running with like ankle weights on or something.
Right.
Like there might be specific workouts where it would be like good to do that for like a short time, but you would never go run like, oh yeah, my way of training for a 5K is to go out and run 3 miles every day with ankle weights on. Cause then when I do it, I'll take them off and I'll be faster.
And it's
like,
be so fast,
what's going to happen is you're going to get injured and you're going to have to run so stupid to accommodate the weight. Like you're going to hurt yourself.
Right.
And I'm not concerned. I'm about to hurt myself swimming with a bathing suit on, you know,
sure. But I understand the comparison.
The comparison, yeah. Just like just cause it could make you stronger doesn't mean it's the only way to do it. And it's like, just take one step backwards and examine it, and it's okay to admit to myself that like you were just wrong. Just get and the good news is you don't have to keep being wrong.
Right.
Right. It's like great news. Now I get to go buy new stuff, and two, I'll get to swim better.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, I know these kinds of thoughts, like where you get like really in. You get in your own way about like how to do something, but like to your credit, when it comes to swimming, like it kind of reminds me of like what my own early relationship with climbing was a lot like, where like I think and Alice will bring this up with me sometimes too, like, you know, like I've talked for years and years and years about like car audio and speakers and stuff like that, and how it's like it's a thing that I loved when I was a kid, and really like since I've been an adult I haven't like stretched that avenue very far or really like pursued it, because it always feels like this, like compared to refinishing my floors, putting speakers in my car feels like completely unimportant.
Right.
Like, you know, my house probably means more to me than my car does.
Right.
And there's always,
and even if you put them in your car, it's not like it's the car's performing better.
No. Yeah. I mean, so it's like one of those things where like you can't, like I struggle to do that. And so like, you know, but then like when I talked to like Alice about it, she's like, you know, is there anything like, you know, you want for the Christmas this year or whatever? And I was like, I don't know. Like I still keep thinking about like car speakers, but she's like, yeah, but you like love to do the research on stuff like that. Like, I feel like I'd be like taking away part of the fun if I did it. And I'm like, well, I get that. Like because there is a huge amount of fun. Like I like to research, and I like to like learn things and figure out like when I ultimately make the decision, like, you know, it's like, this is why I chose this one. You know, it's like all that like kind of feeds into like how I explain it to people. And like, it is part of the overall experience. But, one of the things that I think I slowly started realizing with rock climbing was like, I would go and like, when I got there, I just signed up for like a basic membership or whatever. And I was just using the shoes that they offered right there in house. So it'd be like, if you became like, if you got really into bowling, but didn't buy your own bowling shoes, you're just using the ones that they give you.
Right.
And which is a perfectly fine way to do it. And the thing was that like, I got quite good even just wearing those shoes.
Yeah.
And then even like once I got like my first pair, they were still kind of like a beginner's pair of shoes, not like a more advanced pair, even though I was slowly progressing to like more advanced climbs. And like, I think on some level, what was so great about that experience to me is that I wasn't being caught in the weeds on my equipment or my gear. It was almost like for the love of the game.
Right.
Like, I just want to go and do it.
Right.
And like, you know, so like, even if other people were like, oh, I'm looking at getting these, it was almost like a conversation that while I would normally be so excited to talk gear, to talk like accessories, to talk about that type of stuff, I was like, it doesn't really matter to me. I have shoes that work. I'm able to complete my climbs. I'm not preoccupied on it. Like, maybe they could be better, but I'm not stewing there either.
Right.
You know, and so I feel like the big thing for you is like, maybe you've gotten far enough into it where it's like, maybe I can optimize a little bit, but you've been doing it this whole time without going for the extra equipment.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that probably is more a sign of like the underlying passion,
right,
you know, for the activity. And the only reason I really bring that up is because I think it can be hard to put your finger on what you love about something. And sometimes it's almost like, for me, I feel like that's like what it was with like rock climbing. It's like what I could recognize was that it was like, I didn't need anything to like bolster my enthusiasm. I didn't need extra gear, new gear to kind of like play that game of like, keep it up, you know, where it's like, okay, I just bounced, you know, I got a new pair of shoes. So bounce the ball back up in the air for a little while longer.
Yeah.
You know, until it comes down, and then, you know, maybe I need a new chalk bag,
right,
you know, like, because you got to find a way to keep the enthusiasm alive.
Right.
You know, it's like, I didn't need that. I just enjoy doing the
well
thing.
I mean, I'm not saying like I need this like reinvigorate myself.
I understand. Yeah. I think you've gotten to a point though where it's like, well, you know, maybe it's just the next logical step.
Yeah. Conversely, let me ask you this, because you were exceptionally good at rock climbing,
yeah,
like compared to everyone else. So I could almost even see a version of you being like, you know, I'm out here, I've just got the house shoes or whatever, like, oh, look, you guys got chalk bags and you got your own, you know, you got like fancy chalk, or you've got like a grip mechanism, or you're, you know, like you bought new shoes or whatever. And it's like, that's all great, I'm still climbing better than you. So it's like, you know, like what, like, you know, go do all that, whatever. Like, it doesn't even matter. Cause like, I clearly, like, it can't make that much of a difference, cause I'm still beating you with the house gear.
Right,
you
right.
Know,
I mean,
not
yeah.
like, not like I think that you have this like negative attitude or hyper competitive spirit about it or anything.
Right, but like I was able to excel without,
right.
Yeah.
In which case, this is like, yeah, you guys are focusing on the wrong things. Like, focus more on the climbing or on the strength or whatever. And like talking yourself into like, it's not even worth it to get the gear.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I know it is interesting. And you know, I probably brought this up before, I'm sure somewhere on the pop, but like I remember growing up, like every rec league sport I ever did or any like, you know, formal organized activity, there would always be someone who I could pretty quickly nickname as like Stuff.
Yeah.
And Stuff was usually the person who, you know, one way or another, you know, had supportive parents, enthusiastic parents, whatever, you know, but like they might show up and have like the best cleats and shin guards and like a brand new like World Cup ball and like a proper jersey.
I know what you mean. Like yeah, we'd go to the pub runs, and it's like, this is a 3-mile run with a beer at the end, and there's some guy over there wearing a reflective armband and a hydro vest and carrying a water bottle with his like running glasses and a GPS watch, and you're like, bro, we're running 3 miles on the greenway, chill.
right. Yes, yeah, there's not a lot of traffic other than us.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Because it's a non-motorized vehicle arena.
Yeah.
You're right. And so sometimes you see that. And that's where, like, you know, I've been on both ends of the spectrum. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes I think that, like, being pot committed to an experience, like, you know, like when I bought the boat, for example, it was like, okay, I spent a lot of money on this, so, like, I need to go use it. Like, I need to be out there. But the good news was, I also just like being out there. Like,
right.
it's not a battle for me. But
yeah.
I have done that justification game before, where it's like, well, if I'm going to spend this much money on it, like, I need to make sure I'm doing it. And, like, I think a lot of times what I end up finding is that like, it's like my own weird personal unenforced by literally no one brand of like masking,
mm-hmm.
where it's almost like I will talk myself into believing I enjoy something because look, I bought all the toys
right
to go with it.
Right.
You know, and it's sort of like, no, when you really can't help it, it's almost like none of that stuff seems to matter.
Right. Right.
In the same way.
Okay. Okay. Let me switch topics again here. So you were talking about speakers in your car.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So I have two things on that. One, I feel like in the past like 2 or 3 weeks, I have felt like, you know what would be great is speakers in my car.
Nice.
Okay. But for another reason, which I feel like is setting, I feel like I have set myself up for a like semi-embarrassing thing, which harkens back to a couple of weeks ago on the pop.
Okay.
Okay. You'll recall that a couple of weeks ago, I was like, let me try and listen to some of this like this K-pop music in the car. And immediately Beth called me and was like, hey, what are you listening to?
You listen to K-pop? And it's like, I got caught.
It took 2 seconds or whatever. Anyway, despite that, I have pushed forward on my Blackpink listening here.
So you're still listening to some more K-pop?
I'm listening to more of it. And let me tell you, I enjoy their music so much. Like, so much. It's so good.
Yeah.
It is great. Like, it is so different from any other music I've ever listened to.
Unbelievable.
And it's fantastic. But it is also extremely bass heavy a lot of the time. And I'm oh man, this would be great music for subwoofers.
Yeah.
For sure. But that's, I could talk about why I like it, but the other thing that I feel like I've already been embarrassed by my wife calling me and being like, what are you listening to? Whatever. So the issue now has been that because I actually have something to listen to on Spotify that I'm like looking forward to listening to, which is almost a new experience for me.
Right. Right.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not that I've never like listened to music or like music or anything, but I am rarely like looking forward to listening to music.
Right.
You know, so I'll be like getting in my car and I'll be like, all right, let's just jam out here. Let's go. Or let's get pumped up. Let's whatever. And I'll turn it on. But now I'm like, I got to make sure Beth's not listening to something else. Like, because I don't want to like interrupt her listening.
Okay.
And what I'm running into is the realization, or what I was running into was the realization that Beth uses Spotify significantly more than me.
Oh, right? Okay.
In terms of like, if she's driving around, maybe she has it on for the kids or whatever. Or if she's at the house, she'll sometimes just have like calm music on in the background.
Sure.
Or whatever. And I don't want to sit there and suddenly be like, boom, we're listening to some like loud bass heavy music and like and have that explode into the kitchen all of a sudden.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what I'm going to do. So I was like, okay. The reason it's a problem, though, is because we share a Spotify account, which is under, like, Beth's name. So I was like, you know what, though? I have my own Spotify account. It's just not, like, paid for.
Okay.
But I just, like, switched over to it so I wouldn't have to worry about, like, interrupting her music.
I was going
to
say, I feel like you were easily at the layer for having your own separate subscription.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So I just switched over to my own Spotify account or whatever. And I've just been using that for like the past week or so. However, I haven't been using my own Spotify account for like years. Like, I think me and you had like a 6-month free trial once upon a time.
Yeah, we did. I know we did a sponsorship with them in like 2017.
Yeah. And like, that's when I used it. And then, you know, me and Beth got married and we were like, oh, you've got it. Let's just use the joint one or whatever.
Sure.
So I've got it, put it on there. Haven't used it all year.
Okay.
Or in years at all, but I have been using it for the last 2 weeks, almost exclusively to Blackpink.
Okay. So your Spotify Wrapped is
Spotify Wrapped, which is going to come out like this week,
is going to be
all that. And I'm just waiting for it.
Like, and how do you feel about that? Like, is part of you almost like you're enjoying it enough to where it's just sort of like own it? Just like, you know, that's all you can do. This is what I like.
All I can really do. I'm here owning it right now. I don't know what to tell you. It's so fun to listen to. I think what's interesting about it is that one, it just sounds different than American music altogether.
Yeah.
Some of it, yeah, I mean, it's in Korean, so you can't even understand it.
Right.
But like, I would say it's like most songs include Korean and English. So there's like parts you can understand for sure. That's not even the point. The point is that like, despite the words, despite the language, you can tell what the attitude is. And it is like extreme confidence.
Okay.
It is like boss power is the energy of the music.
Okay.
And that's like all of it. And it's very fun to listen to in that regard. Cause it's like it's okay to feel confident kind of music, which is a weird thing to say.
I know. I think that we grew up in like an era of time where I can't say definitively that this was part of the messaging that was hitting us, but it almost seemed like every main character of any cartoon TV show we watched growing up, the confident kid was always confident because they were compensating, you know? And it was always like confidence always felt like it like lived in the same camp as arrogance, you know, like it was always like a negative trait to be proud of like who you are, what you are, like how to carry yourself, that type of thing. Like,
right.
And I mean, to the point where like oftentimes, like if you just see me like in a room full of people, I will like literally like hunch, pull my shoulders together and like try to make myself like look small as to not appear.
Right. Right.
It's like my resting demeanor is like anti-confidence.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That is not this music at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe you should
definitely check it out. If that sounds like, you know, your kind of style or whatever. I mean, it's just very like, it's like, I don't know. It's fun music, I think. But, then you're trying to like learn more about the members of the band or whatever. And it's like in person, they're all like, just like funny, silly, goofy people, you know? And like, it doesn't seem like their in-person attitude is the same as their onstage persona at all.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is like funny. But it just feels like very like, I don't know. It feels like more real then in a sense. I don't know. Which I like. And they've also, three of them have been on Hot Ones, and I would recommend you guys watch this. What's funny about that is that anytime I listen to Hot Ones, I've seen their thumbnails pop up, and I'd be like, guess I didn't know who they were at all. You know, the like, members of, yeah, the band.
So you're kind
of
like, guess they were trying to find someone this
week. I know.
Week.
I was like, yeah, I guess they kind of had like a filler celebrity in this week. And now I'm looking at it and I'm like, Hot Ones had some absolute gets. I can't believe they got them.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I was so off the mark.
This is, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, you know, like as we were talking about like F1 at the beginning of today's episode, for example, it's like, that's the kind of thing where I can completely see like there being a percentage of people who were like, I do not understand anything you're saying. What is a McLaren? It's like, I'm not interested. None of these words mean anything to me, but I feel like there probably is a small handful of people out there who like are associated in that world. And they're like, whoa, like, yes, you know, this is so cool. And I think that like sometimes the thing that I will say is that like things that are like extremely popular can sometimes seem a little cliche because of their popularity. But then I feel like we're in a world where there are more growing niches where it's kind of like K-pop is something where probably up until K-pop Demon Hunter, I bet you've lived most of your life never being exposed to it at all, despite it being a worldwide phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like sometimes it's almost fun when you just like open the gates of like a new, I mean, not to bring it back to communities again, but like a new community.
Right.
And all of a sudden you understand what it means. You understand who the figures are. You understand like more about like what's driving this phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it's like, then you're like, whoa. Okay,
right.
Now everything new makes sense. Like, you know, and
it is like, okay, I can tie this all together. Ready? So there is like, I think it's funny when things like people are unaware of the way they are personally being affected by massively popular stuff they have no idea about.
Okay.
Okay. So like, for example, you've probably heard of like Labubus, the keychains or whatever, right?
Yep. Yeah.
You've heard of them. That's because of Blackpink. That's because of them.
Really? It's
because of Lisa, who is the girl who played Mook on White Lotus. She is the one who's like posting the pictures with her bags and the Labubus, and like, that's it. That's the answer. That's why.
So they these things have become massively popular because of her.
Because of her. Yes. She is the reason. Boom. Like, other people have done it. Whatever. Doesn't matter. That's the origin point. That's why they're so popular.
Wow.
It's like, you don't even know about it. Okay. Last week when you were getting your tattoo whatever, you talked about how everyone was like, they were overusing the phrase holding space.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure if we talked about that part of the pop, but anyway, holding space, right?
It felt like in the space of this room that like I was in, it felt like everybody was using it almost as this like buzzword.
Yeah.
Like it, like throughout the course of the day, like I heard multiple people say like, I'm just trying to hold space, you know?
Right.
And it was like, yeah, yeah. Like, sure. And I mean, the thing, my genuine feeling was like, I'm sure that there is a very obvious underlying sentiment behind this. But when you start being exposed to like a new buzzword, it can sometimes feel like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was like, as you told me about that, and we were like trying to like work out like, what exactly does holding space mean? And does that like feel like it makes sense with the way they were using it? So I was looking it up, and holding space is a psychology concept, meaning creating a safe space for someone or something by being present for them physically, emotionally, and mentally without judgment.
Okay.
So I'm not sure the way you described it to me, the way they were using it, made sense.
Yeah. Like my interpretation based on context clues was almost like, if I knew I was going to have like a very, very important, like formal dinner with a pending client tonight or something, then like, I would almost be like going throughout my day, like not using all of my social battery, so that like, by the time I got to that, I like held space for this experience.
Right.
And I mean, that might be like a situation where it's like, I don't know, like maybe that's like the wrong thing because it's a little bit like less personal, a little more like business oriented, but the same could be true. Like, you know, if your spouse is like going, you know, like dealing with like losing a job or, you know, like a lost a family member or something like that. Like it's impacting somebody directly in your orbit. And it's like, I really need to be like holding space for them right now because I know they're going to need me.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, I need to make sure I'm not like exhausted because at the end of the day, they're going to want some.
Right. Okay. So the phrase itself comes from, initially the idea of like a shorter version just called holding, which is the relationship between like, it was used to describe the relationship between like a mother and a newborn child and like the space they would create for them by holding them and like making them feel safe.
Okay.
And like nurturing them, feeding them, whatever.
Okay.
That. And then it sort of like evolved into also meaning like, you know, hold, like you're like holding that kind of space for another person as if it's your child and you're like paying attention to them in that kind of like, there's nothing you can tell me that will make me mad at you kind of way.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, where it comes back to your tattoo or whatever, and our whole conversation is that I guarantee you the reason they're saying it is because specifically of an interview with Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo.
Okay.
During their Wicked promotional tour after the first movie.
I do remember this. I feel like, yes. Cynthia Erivo said.
Yes. The interviewer told Cynthia Erivo that people since or like leading up to the movie had been listening to the lyrics of
Defying Gravity
and holding space for that to like, and it like, the whole interview is like the whole interview became like a giant meme because like the way she phrased the question, she sort of misuses the phrase holding space. Cynthia Erivo definitely interprets it in some way. Ariana Grande like grabs her fingernail or something in like a comforting gesture. The two share a moment, and it like, then the interviewer backtracks a little like, well sorry, maybe it's not everywhere, but like I've seen it some, or like it's a very funny little clip.
Okay.
And
okay.
But whatever, that moment went really popular, and as a result the phrase holding space became widely popular.
Okay.
I don't know, but based on your description, it didn't sound like maybe the guys doing your tattoo or the people in the room while you're doing tattoo were super into like musical theater or were up to date on their Wicked memes or anything.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, like what, like, you know, I told one of the guys that, you know, we do like a Harry Potter podcast or whatever, and he had not read nor watched the movies. So like, yeah, his relationship with pop culture was at least somewhat limited.
And yet
affected. Yeah, you're right.
By this movie and this interview that he has no idea about, but now he's saying holding space because of a meme on the internet like,
right,
2 years ago.
Yes.
That has made its way to his vocabulary and he doesn't know why.
Yeah.
Which I,
yeah,
think is funny.
That is funny.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Yep. This is, I mean, it's weird. It's very weird. It's like, you know, like the ways in which these new words come about, like I think, like the example I sometimes give is the word like vibes.
Yeah.
Like I remember like watching Love Island or Bachelor or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
Bachelor in Paradise, big vibe town.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're like, you know, they would go, they would talk to somebody, then they would go like reconvene with their friends. They're like, well, like, you know, he's just good vibes, you know? And it's sort of like, it's like, okay, you know, like, but then the thing is that you give it enough time and all of a sudden you start saying it and you start to understand the meaning of it. And it just kind of becomes like part of your vernacular. And it's like when like a new term is a new, like, you know, word or whatever is coined that fits the demands of the zeitgeist, you
right.
know, like what, ooh, is
well phrased.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's just sort of like, well, now it drops in. Now we have like a better way to describe what was otherwise like a medium grade ambiguous middle ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
vibes.
I know. Yeah. We're just vibing over here. Yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. As always, if you have any feedback for us, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Through the Gryffindor is hitting the road once again for Through the Griffin Tour this upcoming March, and we are headed to the southwest section of the country this time. We are coming to Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Houston, and Dallas. I am so excited for this tour. As usual, we'll have our VIP tickets in case you want to get, to meet me and Ben. We will be doing a Jay vs. Ben before the show, answering questions submitted by you guys. We'll be doing Q&A and, of course, a live performance of Through the Griffin Door. It is my favorite thing in the world, being out on the road, meeting you guys, interacting with the community. There is seriously nothing like it at all. Tickets are on sale now to every single one of those show dates. If you want more information about dates and times and specific venues, you can head on over to supercarlinbrothers.com/events. Seriously, I cannot wait to see you guys in real life and to be back on the road with the entire crew. All of them will be there. You get to meet the entire SCB crew. Like, I know we talk about magic, but it is real. This is the real magic of the show. It's not in the books. It's in the people. We'll see you there.